Hi, Doctor.
Hi, Dad.
I think we should tell our audience right at the beginning that they may hear some Molly sounds.
Yeah, there may be anything from, crying to moving around or sniffling with her constant congestion. But she's in the background.
Okay. Hopefully she won't go off the deep end until we're done with this. But and we can expect Molly to be a frequent visitor to this podcast for the next several months at the very least, right?
Yes, as long as I'm her food source.
Okay. Yeah. So in the next, could be the next, close of the next year or whatever, however long that takes. So today we're talking about a subject near and dear to my heart. I've been kind of taken by the whole artificial intelligence thing since ChatGPT came on the scene at the end of, I want to say that was 2022. I don't think I'm getting my years mixed up there, but.
2022, yeah, maybe it was.
2022. And it seems like, you know, we've already gone eons. They just released this next version of not ChatGPT, which is an open AI tool, but there's another, you know, competing AI company called Anthropic, and their model is called Claude. Who knows why it's called Claude? You would never call your child Claude. I don't think or name your child Claude. But
how is it different?
Well, it's just each one of these is trying to become, you know, more and more smarter, call it.
Yep.
More, you know, be able to do more and more things.
Yep.
And people are kind of going off the deep end about this Claude. And I guess there's three kind of versions of Claude, but at the top end, it can do just incredible things.
Like what?
This physics thesis thing from scratch, like, you know, not even a graduate level student could do on theoretical physics and what have you, or some medical, you know, types of either diagnoses or whatever. And that's going to be the topic of discussion today is AI in healthcare. And, you know, we should state at the beginning, this is a fast evolving. So
kind of scary.
It's scary. And well, so let's start there, because I came across some interesting survey data on doctors' views on AI in healthcare. And so this is the general, let me ask you this before I give you the survey results. And this was done, I think, by the Harris poll. So before I give you the results, tell me if you are, and you got to choose one of these three, pessimistic, optimistic, or undecided about AI's future role in healthcare.
I would say optimistic.
I am too. But so we are not necessarily, well, we're close to the majority, but there's not a clear majority. The poll results were 21% are pessimistic. So that's a non-insubstantial percentage.
It is a very broad question. So I would say, when you think of it as being able to, you know, identify things better and diagnose things easier, and with the way that the reason why everyone's burnt out in medicine is just because you're supposed to do too much in too small of a span of time. You know, it's just all about packing it in. So if we're able to think of it as, okay, you'll be able to diagnose things better and sooner, maybe able to identify things on scans better and earlier, you know, and I don't know, review people's charts, that sort of stuff. But if I'm a radiologist, I'm pessimistic, because
but my personal right. Well, it might be better for patients, but worse for the radiologist.
Right. Because there's certain fields where it could take over. But then there's plenty of fields where you might think, you know, you can replace. My fear with general AI in healthcare is that, you know, hospital systems are looking to make to be as profitable as possible. So they're going to potentially think they can replace physicians who are paid more than advanced practitioners, you know, the
right.
The schooling and education that we have compared to nurse practitioners and PAs is, you know, is like thousands and thousands and thousands of hours. But what they're going to do is try to replace physicians with AI plus an advanced practitioner, thinking that that would be sufficient, you know?
Exactly. Or hell, at some point a nurse, you know?
Right.
A nurse who's been trained on the AI.
Right. There's plenty of fear to have and where that pessimism I'm sure is coming from. But I think on the whole, as far as information integration and identification, I mean, that's only going to be helpful, you know. It just has to be used, you know, for the right, in the right ways. And history has shown us, as far as insurance companies and hospital systems, that the patient's not coming first. Right. So that there's that fear of, okay, how is this going to be used, and to the detriment of patients, because you can't lose all of the human component.
Right. Component of it. And so to finish up on that survey, 21% are pessimistic. The rest are split pretty evenly between optimistic and just don't know.
Yep.
And one other thing, your point around, you know, pretty much all physicians are feeling burnt out is not a lie. The other thing that's another thing they surveyed in this. And by the way, this was about 1,000 primary care and specialty physicians. So
right.
pretty broad swath. Over 90% of doctors feel burned out often.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you're in that boat.
Yeah, much less so in direct primary care, what I do now, than before, but it's still, and part, I think a big piece of it is that, you know, you're not, and I don't mean to like discount anyone else's profession, but you're not dealing with someone's car or someone's cup of coffee or, right, you know, so it's that background level of stress,
importance, and urgency,
a little bit of fear, you know, that you're not missing anything and doing the right thing, and you know, that piece of it, I think, is what makes it tough as a physician to not feel burnt out.
Right. The potential for harm, so to speak, is a lot more than if you were a barista.
Right.
Essentially. It's on that burnout issue. The issue revolves around, a lot of the issue revolves around not enough face-to-face time with patients. You know, when you worked in the corporate environment, you know, what was your average face-to-face visit time with a patient?
Yeah. I mean, it's probably 10 minutes.
And now as a direct primary care, it's
like 60 to 90. I mean, no, sometimes it's a lot quicker if it's something simple and easy. But yeah, for like regular visits, you know, an hour. And sometimes I still feel occasionally that I have to like wrap things up because I only blocked off an hour. It's too bad, because it's a matter of profit making for, you know, the system. So it's, if you could just cut it in half what a primary care doc sees in a day, then all these docs in the that are employed, which there's benefits to being employed, right, and not doing your own, having to run your own practice,
absolutely,
you know, are giving adequate care, better than adequate care, the care that you should be getting, you know. And patients are winning and the doctor's winning, but the hospital wants to, you know, constantly make more money, so it's a business.
Well, you know, around that kind of profit motive piece of it, I think one interesting kind of analog that I just read about this week is there's this company called Klarna. They're a Swedish company.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
You heard of them? They're one of these buy now, pay later, or pay over time type of companies. Big company. They just reported in their latest earnings release that they were able to replace 700 customer service people with AI.
Wow.
With an AI customer service bot, essentially. And that will generate $40 million in added profit for them. So, you know, right, those savings right to the bottom line.
Yep.
But even more importantly, they are seeing that like the average call time, customer service call time has gone from 11 minutes to 2.5 minutes to resolve.
Wow.
That there are like many, many fewer callbacks when the AI is handling the issue.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, granted, customer service is not healthcare, but
it's still scary for all those jobs.
Exactly. Yeah. I would not want to be a customer service representative in this day and age. So let's move now to talk about some near-term use cases for AI in medicine, and then potentially longer term. And I'll just kind of lay them out there. I did some research. Actually, I asked AI for what are the near-term use cases, what are the longer-term, and I got a nice list.
It could be biased.
Yes. Well, let's see. Well, the first one on the list for near term, so let's deal with near term first, is something you've already brought up: enhanced medical imaging.
Yeah.
And diagnosis.
Yep.
That's.
Yep.
They specifically said, and this made me think of Brandon, who's an ophthalmologist. They specifically mentioned the diagnosis of diabetic retinopathy. That's the word. So apparently, if in a eye exam, the optometrist or ophthalmologist can get an early signal on diabetes by looking at, you know, that the blood vessels in the retina. Is that correct?
Yep. Or people who have diabetes, we have them get regular eye exams to make sure that the diabetes isn't affecting the retina or isn't progressing to affect the retina. So usually it's done at like an optometrist's office. And then if you have diabetic retinopathy, then you usually see like a retina specialist who is an ophthalmologist. And they do, you know, certain treatments to try to help it, but.
Yeah. And anecdotally, I've definitely heard, I think you've heard about, you know, AI is already better than a human, unassisted human being at identifying breast cancer,
yeah,
you know, potential breast cancers,
right,
or other types of solid tumors.
Which is, that's great. I mean, that's the goal, right? It's just,
right,
then how does that translate into the day to day? And then does that entire specialty at some point get phased out?
Well, either phased out or changed in some fundamental way, because radiologists don't just read scans, right?
Correct. So, some do. Some just read scans.
Right. Some, but those are the ones that, you know, may, you know, I got to believe at this point, you do not have situations where, let's say, someone's mammography is just being read by an AI and the results are handed back to the doctor,
yep,
you know what I mean,
right,
or the patient,
right,
without some human intervention. But it's not going to take too long if the study after study indicates that the unassisted AI is just better,
right,
and that will be the case. So let's move on to another one that is very close to home to you and makes all the sense in the world, and that's clinical decision support.
Yep.
When you see a patient, I think definitely, you know, that primary care role is such, you know, so different than that oncologist role or ophthalmologist role that is very specialized. You see the patient and they, you know, I don't know, they've got a fever and malaise and whatever, and it could be, you know, anything from cancer to some benign virus to who knows what, you know,
it's an infection. Scary part of primary care that's not compensated very fairly, because if you ask any specialist, they're like, oh gosh, I can't imagine, because I would love to know everything about my field, like to know, have a patient come in and know exactly what's going on and how to treat it, But to have like, okay, this person could exactly have anything from something really, really, really serious and bad, or something that's completely nothing. And we have to take into consideration what, you know, insurance will cover as far as a workup goes and what's reasonable, right? You can't just like get everyone an MRI for any cough or whatever. So it's
right. And you go through
constantly,
you know,
have that decision making going on in your head, like risk benefit and, you know, likelihood. And so you kind of are constantly putting all that together.
Right. That differential diagnosis stuff, but there's, you know, there's stuff in there that's, oh, this is a 0.1% chance.
Right.
But
and someone's going to be that person. Someone's going to be
in a big enough population, right?
It's kind of, absolutely. That's why it's hard. We take it at a population level. This is like, I can't, this is what we're going to do. But it really, it's really hard for that one person, right?
Who fit
that mold of, it's hard.
Now, and this may be the longer term perspective, you know, 10, 20 years out. But actually, I don't even think so. You know, I do think within, I'm going to call it 5 years.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I was wrong on self-driving cars. You know, in like 2015, I thought we'd all be using self-driving cars by 2020.
Yeah.
And I was wrong on that. Yeah. So I maybe, you know, take this with a grain of salt, but I wouldn't be surprised if let's say 2030, it was just the norm in an office like yours to have an AI listening to you and your patient interaction.
Yeah.
And that AI assisting in the
I think it'll be sooner legs. It'll be sooner than 2030. So AI is currently already listening to patient encounters as long as the patient agrees to help doctors, and this goes back to the burnout thing, to write their notes. So the patient agrees to consent to AI listening to the visit, and then AI just makes the note for the doctor so the doctor doesn't have to waste their time charting for hours, and they can actually dedicate more time to the patient. But the patient has to consent to it, and I'm sure once in a while someone doesn't, but still, it's allowing the AI to do the note, and it's already being integrated in electronic, you know, health records for different ways. So if they're already listening to encounters and making notes, it's not that big of a leap, you know, to suggesting diagnoses or workups to aid the person. And then just the scary part is that you can't discount the human component and the training that's required to decide what is needed, you know. And that's the fear, is that they're just going to assume that any nurse or advanced practitioner is adequate when assisted with AI.
Well, that was the next one on the list, is administrative workflow optimization, that sort of thing.
That's where it starts. I think that's where it really starts. It's already happening. There's already doctors using, like, I think it's like Freed AI, and they make, you know, notes. They say you have to read through them quickly and you have to modify something. Sometimes stuff is not correct, but by and large, it, you know, it's cutting down that admin time. But
the next step on it is it for actually to be your assistant and suggest that follow-up tests, or suggest a potential diagnosis, or, you know, have you thought about that and what have you? What do you think about using AI to be a chatbot for patient interaction online? Because increasingly doctors don't just interact with patients face to face. It's text and all that sort of thing.
I think it wouldn't be bad if it was like to triage, you know, like somebody, but it better be doing, it better not glitch, you know what I mean? If there's no one kind of double checking. I mean, you can imagine that having AI triage your concerns or complaints and identify someone who like needs to be seen or whatever probably is a heck of a lot smarter than the after hours nurse who, and it's not to discount the nurse, but the after hours nurse who just has a page that they're going off of. Like if they say this, then tell them to go to the ER. If they say this, you know, then whatever. It's not, it's just, it doesn't have that level of, I don't know the word. the same level of, sorry, you can cut this up. She's she just spit up a little bit on my arm. So I was
nice.
All
right. Visual for us. Yeah. All right. But yeah, it doesn't have the same level of, I don't know, rigor, would you say,
or just personalization, really, you can actually get a, because if you call, after hours to your pediatrician or something, and the baby has any like 10 concerns, pick any of these 10, then the answer is, that's their sheet, you know, the answer is go to the ER, the answer is give Tylenol and call back, you know what I mean? So it's it's just an algorithm or whatever. Whereas AI could definitely do a better job of teasing out
more specific.
But still, even that is concerning because you don't know if it's, and yes, humans make mistakes too, right? So, but that doctor who's listening or taking notes on the concerns is gonna be able to look and see and understand sick versus not sick every time. Right. Not to say they don't make the perfect decision every single time, but can AI identify someone who's sick and needs something now versus not sick and is okay to wait, you know, every single time? But we know how technology sometimes glitches. So I think that there has to always be I think it has to be an assist. It cannot be a standalone, you know, because you're talking about someone's life, you know.
Right. So,
you've got a sick baby and they just didn't say the keyword to AI or something. But a doctor knows what means that baby needs to be seen now. Or even if you're looking at the child, you know, that's the concern with telehealth too, is if you do too much telehealth and you're not putting eyes on the patient or whoever it is, you know, you can get, you can definitely get,
and that's actually
someone's fine when they're not really fine. And AI obviously doesn't have eyes. I mean, right now.
that's a great point, Nicole, because I do believe that, you know, you could envision scenarios where if it's just, you know, by a text interchange, that AI can do a damn good job of, you know, based upon the information, because the current, you know, kind of flavor, so to speak, or technology behind the AI is these large language models. So they're built on language. However, I just listened yesterday to a discussion. I think it was the lead Microsoft guy for Microsoft AI, you know, projects and whatever.
Yep.
And they were the topic was that I was listening to was, you know, will these LLMs lead us to AGI, artificial general intelligence, like being as intelligent as a human being?
Right.
And this guy was like, nope, LLMs cannot do that by themselves because there is so much intelligence that a human being has that is derived from their senses.
Right. Right.
And sight, hearing, what have you. Yep. And they talk about the bandwidth of, like, by the time a child is 4 years old, they will have, through their eyes alone, that one sensory organ generated or processed more data than the largest LLM does now.
Right.
And the largest LLMs are ingesting the basically the entire internet, public internet, which is basically the entire human set of knowledge, written knowledge, essentially. And so that, you know, that additional piece probably is also the limitation on medicine AI.
Yeah.
However, they're working on ways to integrate
exactly
that piece as well.
Right.
So, a couple more before I know you have to go. So one interesting application for me in this is, you know, we've talked about its application to diagnose sick patients and to treat sick patients and whatever, but to create essentially precision medicine type of wellness plans custom tailored for patients based upon all of their, you know, personal data. Could include their, you know, their genomic profile. Not to mention all their lab tests, not to mention all their vital sign information and height and weight and even per, you know, kind of demographic information or personal information and all that stuff, and then spit out for that person the perfect nutrition, fitness, sleep.
Even before integrating all of that, you know, I use it for, you know, to be more efficient, right? So if I've got someone who I know has like metabolic syndrome, not diabetes, but they're insulin resistant and they have high cholesterol, and they are just wondering, you know, what kind of diet to do, you can literally say, what's the best diet for someone who has blank, 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 or outline a, you know, healthy diet for someone who blank. So that I don't need to sit there and come up with all of the, you know, all of the suggestions. And it just outlines something for me and I can give that to the patient, you know?
So that's awesome.
It can, and then you can say, I've realized, can say, then add in for a 45-year-old female, and that will tailor it even a little bit better.
Further. Yeah. So is that a particular program you're using then?
I just use
ChatGPT.
The paid version.
Yeah. No, well, that's, I don't think it matters.
It feels like the paid version might give you a little bit
more.
Or 4.5, I don't know what it is.
It's 4.0. I think it's 4.0.
Just because I can sit there and spend an hour and use the knowledge that I already know and outline, you know, and try to make it sound, easy for anyone to read and understand and whatever. But I could also type it in and have it spit it out for me.
Well, and you can also prompt it to give you references. So you can also, if the person wanted to dig in further or what have you, they could, you know, go to XYZ website.
Now, what I have heard from physicians using this for stuff is be careful. Because if you say, because that is a concern that we didn't talk about, is what about all the information on the internet that's not correct, right?
Right.
So how do you know what it's telling you is correct? And then it gives you references. And there are some references that are just completely not even like, they're fake. They're like fake references.
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah. So, so you've got that issue of the AI hallucinating. Well, that's where you want to review it before you actually hand something to the patient.
Right.
To make sure.
Exactly.
It makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, it's, so I use it as on like a low level. I'm not using it like, here's this person's labs, tell me what's wrong with them. You know, I might say the patient has this and this, what might cause blank, you know, because I have much more information about the patient and understanding about the big picture. But I use it a lot for little things like type up instructions for a patient for a sprained ankle. You know, it's just to save me time. Like I know what the instructions are, but I'd like to save time for me writing them all out for somebody and just be able to copy paste and send it.
Yeah, that's awesome that you're using it. I didn't realize you were doing that. That's awesome. The last example I'll throw out there, and this is, you know, happening now, but will accelerate and maybe ultimately the most impactful in terms of saving lives and decreasing morbidity and mortality is drug discovery, genomics, medicine, all of that sort of thing can be accelerated tremendously using this. And it is, you know, the first glimpse of it was several years ago now. They used an AI model to do what humans had been doing in the past to model protein, the way proteins fold.
Right.
Because the way proteins fold makes a difference in terms of how they work within the body. And proteins are the kind of the building block of all of the triggers that kind of, you know, we've all got this genetic profile, but it's the proteins and the way the proteins are structured that turn the switches on and off and control all of our the way our cells function and what have you. So they it used to take, and I forget the how long it used to take a human being to figure out one possible,
Right.
way that proteins folded, and in, maybe a day, and I might have that time frame wrong by, 23 hours. This AI figured out the 200 million ways that proteins fold.
Right, exactly. So it's like, let's not be stupid here and make our make let's work smarter, not harder.
Right, exactly, and apply it. So
Yep.
now they're able to apply it. We're coming up with these gene therapies for various things. There's a bunch of diseases that are single caused by single genes, and then there's another set that are caused by mutations in a few genes and what have you, and then there's a set that are caused by mutations in a lot of genes. But going through that and analyzing that with AI and able to come up with potential treatments that then you can, so you can narrow, whereas a human would have said, oh, for this disease, I know, it's being caused by these 50 genes and in various combinations. There might be 300 potential drugs that might, have a have a have an impact. Obviously, you can't go out and do a randomized control study on 300 drugs. It's just, it's just
Right.
too expensive. But the AI can narrow it down to the two that are, have, offer the most opportunity. So that's where we're going to see a lot of pretty incredible things coming down the road, and a lot of it is focused on cancer treatments too. So.
No, I think overall it should be exciting and positive, but when used for good.
Yes, as long as the
Saving.
is yeah, as long as Skynet doesn't happen, you probably don't know that what that reference is. You ever watch the Terminator movies?
No, I don't think that.
In the Terminator movies, the artificial intelligence is called Skynet, and they attack the humans. These robots attack the humans and take over the world. So, as long as that doesn't happen, we have an optimistic future. Yes. Check out Terminator, and there's many sequels to that as well. So, in your spare time.
Yep, definitely.
Okay. I think we've covered it for now. I'm sure, this is, by the way, I think this is episode 89. So I'm sure we'll cover this subject again, maybe in episode 189, 289, and 389. So,
Yeah, or even sooner than that.
yes, or sooner. Exactly. But we'll let you get back to your busy day. Thanks for carving out some time.
Yes, no problem.
Okay. Love you.
Love you.
Ciao. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening. You can visit thedoctorandad.com, that's spelled thedrandad.com, for show notes to any of our podcasts, as well as other useful info on extending health span. Now the legal disclaimer. This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. And no doctor-patient relationship is formed. Use of this information in show notes is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not meant to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Listeners should not disregard or delay taking medical advice or treatment for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their medical professional for any such conditions. We also want you to know that we take no funding from any product or service that may be mentioned on the Doctor and Dad podcast.